Hey, Gopu. How's it going?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing okay. What's going on in your world this week?
Me and Jason, we are planning our Halloween party. So this week,
fun.
We have Halloween, and he's going to be dressing up as a drunk German guy. And
okay.
I'm going to be Elvis Presley. So we
oh,
are
fun.
Getting all the costumes. How about you? Have you planned Halloween?
Not really. It's been pretty hectic the last few weeks, just in terms of busy. I've been traveling a lot. So we were in SFN in Chicago.
Oh yeah.
Last week, I'm trying to remember, and then came back and kids' birthdays, and then this week we have a lot going on.
How old are they, kids?
Peter just turned 7.
Oh.
So it was kind of his birthday party. And then this week at work, we have a big research symposium that I'm on the planning committee. And it's Thursday and Friday, so it's just kind of at this point the last minute details, putting it all together. It's going to be fun. Our keynote speaker studies cone snails. So she studies neurotoxins and cone snails. So I'm pretty excited about it. Mandy Hoffman.
You know what? In an ideal world, I would like to study octopus. I am just so fascinated by that creature.
Yeah. It's a wild world. When you get outside of the standard model organisms, it's crazy. So I teach an advanced neuro class this semester. And I'm telling my students, y'all should come to this. We've talked about cone snails in this class. You will not
really?
Talk about them in any other class, I guarantee you. And she's one of the very, I mean, not too many people study them. And so she's, Dr.
Nice.
Hoffman. So I'm excited about
what
that.
What are we talking about this week?
What's that?
What are we talking about this week?
In class?
No, in the podcast.
Oh, sorry. I got to switch my brain on. So we're going to talk, this week we're going to talk about AI. So this is,
okay.
In the world of academia, for the past year or so, I mean, from the teaching side of things, I've been bombarded by it. I cannot stand to sit through another workshop on how to use AI, blah, blah, blah. But I think we should absolutely touch base with it. It is changing, I think, for a lot of reasons, good and bad, how people do research, how people are dealing with data sets, and I think there's polarizing opinions. What do you think?
I don't know, because I just feel, to be honest with you, I just feel lost in it, because it was 1 year before we had ChatGPT, and it was something else, looking at papers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every software, every research tool claims to have AI, machine learning, and all that. So I'm just like, what is happening here? You know, it seems like overwhelming information out there, and you just are pretty lost or drowned in it, you know.
Sure.
But I personally use, for example, since English is not, it's not my first language, whenever I write grants or papers or even presentation for that matter, if I have a thought in my mind as a sentence, I kind of put it over there and see what are the different phrases I can use it, you know, what are the different ideas in way I can convey
Yeah.
the message. That has
Yeah.
been helpful. But yeah, I'm lost, to be very honest with you.
Okay.
How are you using it?
So I'm very pro large learning model, very pro ChatGPT. That is not as accepted in my circles. There's a lot of people that are still pretty against it for some very cautious reasons. But I think at this point, if you're not using it, you're getting run over by it, I think is what you're saying. It's integrated into everything at this point.
I think it's about, you know, our challenge as scientists in this generation is learning all these things and, you know, kind of like transitioning from 20th century science to 21st century science. You know, I think we are still at the cusp of the change. I think we are the cusp, if you think
Very much.
It.
I think we are going to be a very fortunate generation in that we were trained without it, and now we can take advantage of the benefits of it. And then I think the newer generation coming up that, you know, are going to be born into this world with nothing else but it, there's a lot of considerations we have to be mindful of so that they know how to use it, quote unquote, correctly.
You know, it all reminds me of in period drama movies when electricity comes, all these people freak out. Oh my God, what are they going to do? Oh, this, oh, that. I think it's the same.
I mean, it's I feel like it's paralleling when Google popped up
Right.
like early
Yeah.
2000s and everybody, now it's just part of everybody's world. So I use it for a couple of different reasons. I've been thinking about it since the last time we talked. I think I've got like three ways that I really kind of at this point are relying on it. The day-to-day thing is similar to you. I use it for communication reasons. I actually, you know, because I have a lot of students, undergrads that I work with, oftentimes I use it to help write and construct email.
When you say you use it, what do you use? Do you mean you use ChatGPT or do you use any other? Okay.
So what I will do, and I started doing this full transparency for my own health and well-being. I consider myself very empathetic and compassionate, but I have learned over the, especially the last year, that there are, I have a finite amount of that. And so what I don't like doing is spending a lot of time worrying about constructing an email that may come off as too harsh, too strict, not caring enough, whatever it is. And what I have found very helpful is I'll use it to kind of help me construct a reply to a student, especially with very difficult situations. I've had a couple of them in the last couple few weeks where it's a very tricky situation and I want to make sure I'm saying the right things, expressing very clear boundaries, but also letting them know like you're still supported. I'm not, you know, like pushing
I'm
you
not
off.
your dad, pretty much.
But it helps me to just kind of like be more productive with that. I can type it in. This is exactly what I want to say. Make sure these are the talking points and then bloop, and have it come up with a much more non-emotional reply. So I can put in an emotional reply and it gives me a more professional, less emotional reply. I've used that a lot, especially in the last month or so, just to help me preserve that level of empathy so that I can express it a lot easier. And it's something that I was not totally aware of or that people do, but so that's probably the most frequent way that I've
I
used it.
think that's a good thing. That's a good thing I wanted to, got a good thing. That's one thing I want to share is that I think different AI means different things for different people. I think it's not just like in Google. I think it's like you, I don't know, what is an apple? You know, you put it and you get everything. But and Google, everyone uses it kind of a similar way. And for example, this ChatGPT, it's basically what you make of it, right? So you can, it can be you what you make of it. But I think, well, I can't speak about people, at least me. I genuinely don't know what can we do with it. Yes, I know it's a very intelligent creation. Yes, I know it can do 10 million things, but how can I use it to make my experiments more streamlined, make my lab stuff more streamlined? You know, like day-to-day stuff. I'm not expecting an Iron Man AI robot thing, you know.
So I this is gonna go on a tangent, but I'll bring it back. So I there's this concept called Eisenhower's Principles of Productivity or something like that. So
Alrighty.
President Eisenhower during World War II had a famous quote that said, "I have two types of problems, urgent problems and important problems. Urgent problems are rarely important, and important problems are rarely urgent." And from that, there's been this philosophy of prioritizing what you do, classify them on the level of urgency and the level of importance, right? And what I have found personally is that if I'm putting out a lot of fires, meaning that these are very urgent problems that may or may not be that important, but they're requiring immediate responses, that drains me of my productivity very, very quickly. And what I have tried to do is use these resources to help with that challenge, meaning that if there's things that I can do day to day that I need to take care of, but this helps me be more productive at that. And so the example of like helping with building these replies where I would spend 20 minutes just replying to a single student. Like, it helps me so much if it takes me 45 seconds to a minute to reply to that student. That is invaluable to me. It helps me be more productive at those important tasks that may not be as urgent, but I need a lot of mental energy to take care of them, like writing papers, analyzing data, doing actual experiments and stuff. And so I've really tried to prioritize it for that. So, and I would say you just have to you have to work with it, right? See what it can and can't do.
I think you need to just get used to the interface a bit, like just get familiarized with it, I guess.
Yeah, one of the other things, so getting back to what I use it for research, I just wrote a paper and I used ChatGPT quite a bit to help me write this paper for different aspects. Some of the things that I found very, very, very valuable that I was not aware that we could do was it helped me analyze data. If I had wild, large data sets and I had an idea of what I wanted to do with it, but I wasn't quite sure on how to get the data from it, I could use ChatGPT. You can upload the data to it and ask, what is the format of this data?
Really? I didn't know.
How can I analyze this? Or I want to analyze it in this way. What types of things can I do? And it's very good about walking you through it, right?
Like,
So if
let me take my charger. I'm sorry. I'm just being very clumsy. I
okay.
think it's time for a commercial break.
Yeah, no, a
Just
break for our sponsors.
a second. So that is, you are talking about, what is it? Planning the experiments and basically the desk work, right? Do
So
you think it could help in performing the experiments?
that's what I'm saying. So I would collect the data and then I had like a sequence of things that I wanted to analyze. Like this thing happened, then this thing happened, then this thing. And I got it into a string of different things that changed over time. So over like a 2 minute recording, I wanted to analyze these things. And I could do it. Like I could, and I'm speaking from like writing a Python code scenario of this. I could write it the code, I could figure this out. But what I would do is say, is there a better way to analyze this data? Or I want to analyze it like this. Is there a better way to do that? And what it would do is it would refer me to methods that I would may not have been familiar with. Like, hey, run this type of test, run this type of distribution. What does that distribution mean?
You
Send
can
me
actually say that.
resources, references on how this has been applied to this data set,
So it can
right?
actually brainstorm with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So then, what I would do is I go, okay, here's the data. It's like in an Excel spreadsheet. It would read the Excel spreadsheet, figure out the format of it, right? So it's like over time, like 20,000 samples over a period of time. Each period had a specific voltage or thing, whatever we were analyzing. And it says we can plot it. This is how you would plot it. And it helps a lot, especially if you've got a programming background, because it can help you write the Python code or give you directions on how to write that Python code, right? And then give you insight. I mean, the biggest thing with like coding is like it can do a lot of stuff. It just takes forever to like look it up to figure out. I need to run this test, and then there's some sort of like toolbox or command to run that test, but you have to figure out what that is first. It just makes it so much faster. And so what we were able to do is then run these different distribution profiles. What is the appropriate analysis to analyze them? And then what does it mean? So then I can say, this curve means this. It is the distribution of this cell type across this space. And then they say, if the curve, then ChatGPT would say, if the curve means this, it would suggest that this is the type of thing that's going on in this situation. Right. And so, I mean, you obviously have to be diligent to be like, does that actually make sense? Can you provide references? and resources to help support where you got this information. But it can do that pretty accurately, given.
I've searched for some refer I've been writing a paper and I've searched for some references, and all these references were so made up. They give out such beautiful references with all the title you want to see, and when you look it up in PubMed, it's just not
I
there.
think what I figured out is a lot of the references are correct, but there's some sort of disconnect between PubMed and the Chat GPT. And so if it links to PubMed, it'll link you to a right, it'll link you to a real article, but it's absolutely the wrong article. But if you, well, a lot of the times, if you search for the title and that author, it'll still be there and exist, right? It's just for some reason there's a weird, when you link to it, it doesn't work as much. Now you still have to check. There are definitely cases where the paper just does not exist at all, but I feel like that's getting better. I haven't seen as much of that in the last month or so than like 6 months ago, when you're like, send me a bunch of references for this type of paper, right? I think we were kind of talking about that last time, so.
These are the things that you are doing right now with just the ChatGPT tool, right? Are there any other, like, for example, do you do more organoid-based work for your research, right? So are there any, and I do more addiction-based research. So do you think, are there any specific AI tools kind of streamlined for neuroscience research or organoid research or any other subcategories, or is it just broad chat GPT, this mammoth of a
I don't think I'm not aware of anything that's specific for a
specific?
field, but there are some that are more specific towards academic research,
Oh, I think, is there?
right?
What
And
is that here?
I'm not as familiar with them. I have not used them. I've mostly used ChatGPT, and the thing about it is, as you use it more, it becomes a little bit better at that space. Right. And so one of the things, one of my hacks is download the paper, get the PDF, and you can upload it to your model, your GPT, and it learns it, right? It knows that paper, and then you can refer back to it. And so I'll pull up like a dozen papers, upload them, and then start using them, and it uses the language from those papers, right? So you can say, interpret the data in this avenue. What does this mean? Give me more references for this. Teach me about what this means, essentially, of what it
Oh, wow, I
is.
didn't know
And
we could do all this.
it will then use that as a way to do it, because it's a language model, right? It's a learning, it learns languages. If you can get it in a text format, that's the best case. And so one of the cool things, I'll highlight this. I was tickled by this. I was like, give me a list of references that summarize this thing, right? I've been using it as like a sophisticated Google, and it came up with my own reference. It cited me. I was like, that's great.
You feel proud of
It was great
it.
because it was ac I mean, it was fairly accurate,
Yeah.
in what it was referring to. I was like, yeah, I know the paper well enough to know that that's not exactly true, but I can see where it was coming from, right? It's like a little loose of an interpretation.
But with all this, what are the concerns that you have? Like, even, or let me rephrase it, even with the analysis that you are doing, what are the errors that you have encountered?
Yeah, so I think this goes back to my comment earlier about I think we are in the right generation, because we are aware enough to be skeptical and critical. And so a lot of the times I just use it, like I said, a sophisticated Google. I always go back and check. So for example, if it's like, here's a reference that says this thing, right? I will go back, look at it. It's in a field that I'm familiar with enough with that oftentimes it'll find papers that I've somewhat familiar with. If I haven't read them in a while, I've certainly been exposed to them. I'll go back and reread it, look for what it's specifically referring to. And a lot of times it's not as correct with that. So it'll say like, so and so said X, Y, and Z. And you go back, and the results were not necessarily X, Y, and Z. It could be interpreted as that, right? but it's not specific in that the experiments that they showed were not necessarily that, but it wasn't too far offside. So then you can go back and say, I did it really say that? Where in the paper did it say this? And it can get corrected in a sense, but you have to be very, you still have to go through. If you're new to it and you don't know the field and you're just like, give me a bunch of papers that show me that this drug, it changes synaptic spines and it gives you 15 papers, right? You've got to go through each one of them and make sure that it's doing it. I think we're still at that point. I still think you've got to be careful and cautious about that. And then also use your critical thinking, right? It can help you process information. It can help you process data,
I
but
think
ultimately you've got to be the one making the interpretation.
that is the main problem. Many people think AI can do the critical thinking for you. All you need to do is, hey, do something, and it does it, and you can just trust it. I think that is the
What I
problem.
tell my students in my undergrads that I teach is that most of what you're learning is from a textbook. ChatGPT is going to be pretty solid on that. It's going to be information that's been around for about 20 years that you're going to be learning. If you're a research scientist and you're trying to understand something that's never been done before, you're going to hit that limit. It's not going to give you brand new ideas, right?
But then it's a good repository for what has been done, like you were saying.
So using it to like generate sources, like if I'm writing a discussion, right? I just wrote the discussion of this paper. And just to pull the cap over off your eyes, it was looking at GABA signaling, and looking at how networks synchronize using GABA interneurons. And I was like, I'm almost positive there's a buttload of data on carbalbumin, somatostatin cells, and what they do for large networks in the cortex. And so I had to start systematically going through and figuring out which ones were relevant to what I'm looking for, right? Cortex versus hippocampus. There's definitely a lot in both of those areas, but I want to focus on what types of networks are in the cortex. How does GABA regulate that in the cortex? I know there's vast literature. There's a number of PIs and labs that I can list off the top of my head that are very critical in that space, right? But what is new about this and how does it apply to this specific paper? And so I had to kind of use it to really process it and dig down into it to kind of figure out.
But you know what is my take on all this upcoming things? It's just, to be honest with you, it's just too difficult to keep up with all the changes. Like, I remember when I was old, when I was doing my PhD 10 years ago, RN bulk RNA-seq was crazy expensive, you know? Like my PhD mentor, when she was doing postdoc, like what? Like just before 10, 12 years. That's it. It's not even that too long. She did her work in microarray. And now within 10, and mind you, microarray was just the most maximum thing that you could do for so many years. And now it's like we just don't have microarray. We have spatial transcriptomics now. And I've seen paper, not papers. I've seen somewhere about people are talking about single cell spatial transcriptomics. On top of it, what is it? This seek you know what is it? The programming models. On top of it, AI. It's just at one point, it's just too hard to. And the thing is, if you want to publish good journals, you somehow need to make it spicy, and you need to incorporate all these techniques. And it's just so. It's like, would you do your research or would you learn to keep up with these new technologies? You know, it's very hard to do all this at the same time.
I think that's one of the biggest benefits to encourage people to at least explore some of these large learning models is that we are quickly running into a space where I don't have the bandwidth to keep up with a lot of it,
I
right? And
know.
this is becoming the way to process this information, right? We, I mean, 50 years ago, you'd go to the library, pull out your card catalog, run through the stacks, find a journal article. 20 years ago, right? Google came about, PubMed came about. You could search it online. You had
When did
access
PubMed
to it.
come? Do you know? Just curious.
Do what?
When did PubMed come? Do you know?
I think it was late 90s. Yeah. I mean, it's been around since I've been around. I've always had it available. I think this is the new technological shift to help with that, because we're getting the point where like research from the 50s is gonna still be relevant. People are have done some of this stuff, but we are gonna be so lost in connection with it because, I mean, somebody's if you've done an RNA sequencing project, somebody's probably done an a microarray on it,
Oh
right?
yeah.
But like nobody's going to go back and dig through microarray data, right? And but it exists, and somebody, and it's almost like we need a way, we need a technology that kind of connects it all together. This is, I think, why people are excited about this
You know,
AI approach.
all in all, I am more excited about AI in not the not using ChatGPT to process, my day-to-day at the lab, because I feel like I got that under control. Because the thing is, if I do it, I would feel like I would have to learn a new thing altogether. Might as well just do the dirty work by itself. But what I'm looking forward is the experiment tools, for that matter. For example, to look at seizures, you need a specific software and a system for that. If you do behavior studies, you need specific software to analyze the video and all this. I mean, if a simple facial recognition can do so much for society, imagine what these
Yeah.
specific softwares can do for data acquisition, from just in a mouse, from the movement of whiskers to the tail to their position. You can get data like you haven't gotten it before. I'm excited for that. But again, it's going to be so much data. It's like, how do you make sense of it? That's also.
So I think where the craziest improvements have been for the automatic integration of AI into systems is coding, writing code. I can't tell you how, I mean, I consider myself like an adequate, I'm not a computer programmer. I've watched a lot of YouTube. I've Googled a ton of stuff, right? DIY programmer. You start typing a command in your interface, it'll automatically generate like the next five lines. I'm like, I don't even know how it does it. Because like I know I'm trying to do this thing. I'm like, I gotta do this thing. I start typing it and it's like boop, boop, boop. Do you mean this? I'm like, yes, I think I do. Let me check. And so it's like it's so helpful with that. To your point, as data becomes more and more difficult to analyze, it's no longer I have one group, I've got an average and a variance from that group. I'm comparing it to another group that's got an average and a variance. Are they different or not? As it becomes more complicated than that, I think programming skills are going to be invaluable. And what it allows you to do is develop these tools way faster, right? So the paper that we've been working on, it's very computational. And we spent 2.5 years writing this code to do this high throughput MEA analysis, right? If we had ChatGPT available, or if we had some sort of AI assistance with that code writing, it might have been able to cut way most of that time off. Because a lot of the time it's me figuring out like, all right, I want to do this. I need to set up the logic like this. I need to write it like this, but I have no idea what the language is. I've got to go watch a YouTube video. I've got to go to forums and community forums and Reddit and like, what does this mean? How do I set this up? That doesn't work. I got to troubleshoot it. It just helps me execute what I want to do way faster. Now, I'm not inventing anything new. I'm just using the tools that are available for a specific purpose. And so, as that becomes more available to us, the general science audience, understanding those very fine details from video analysis and image analysis and single cell data sets and all of that stuff is going to be, it's going to be accessible. It's not going to be as overwhelming because we have the ability to do that. You just have to learn the skill sets to get there, right?
So, do you think we are in an age of, what is it? Too much information, but we have figured out a way to sort it through with AI?
I think we're needing to do that. That's what I think, because we need to use AI to help us manage all of this information. I mean, we've been in the age of information for 2 decades now.
But this is something like I've never seen anything before, to be very honest with you. Like
But
it.
I think it's a response ultimately culturally to help us understand that. I mean, my kids today that are in elementary school, they don't stand a chance of learning everything they need to catch up and to be the leader in a space by the time they graduate college with the old school methods,
Oh, yeah.
right? I mean, the advanced science, can you imagine? I mean, the way as fast as a lot of this technology is moving, just in biology, just in biological sciences, not other STEM fields, but just in biology, how fast it's moving.
Yeah.
That they're going to have to spend 15 years as a postdoc if they want to come to the same spot we are right now. I mean, it's ridiculous. I
And
think
we
this is a way that they are going to change and catch up. I'm hoping,
I
hoping
think
that
this
they
will
can do that.
even like I'm sure we are still at the even with all this is going on, I genuinely believe we are still at the infancy of AI. This is baby AIs pretty much. And this
There's
is only the it's only going to be more and more advanced and more efficient in many ways. So how that, like for example, how, just to give you a layman's example, how we do Western blot 20 years before and how we do now is so different here, right? I think it would be the same way how you do science with AI. It's completely new thing.
I mean,
Yeah.
some of that's going to have to be how the AI, how these large learning models get developed, right? They're going to have to be developed with those considerations in mind, right? I know, so like Google has their own, whatever, Gemini, Microsoft has their own. Everybody's got their own
Do you think
learning.
NIH should have their own?
I bet they're building it. I
Working
bet they
on
are.
it, right?
I bet they are. They have to be. But I ultimately, so like one of the big issues right now that I see it, and then it's not an AI issue, it's a capitalism issue. Which is if you ask ChatGPT to give me a list of references, it will give you up-to-date references. Right, it'll give you 2023, some 2024 references, but what I have found is it is largely open access articles. If there's a paywall, you do not get it unless it's an old enough article that NIH has got the text of it available for free. Right, you don't get the format from the journal, but you get the text. You know, like where I hate reading them because they're the paint, like the figures are at the end and. I don't like it, but it's available in text, and so these large learning models have access to it. I think we are limited in that point, and that first of all, in 5 years, if everybody's using ChatGPT instead of Google or PubMed to search their, I mean, who uses PubMed to search for papers anyways, right? I use Google Scholar, I use Google that links me to PubMed. And then if I know something specific, I'll go through the PubMed actual search menu. But in 5 years, if everybody's using ChatGPT to search references, right? I need to know all these references on what, neural stem cells in the hippocampus do in response to methamphetamine, right? but only give them to me that are focused on this cell population. Right? It could be very powerful in that aspect. If it is only pulling open access resources and you're publishing in Nature, like you're not going to get, people aren't going to find you. And I think that is something that publishers are going to have to work out with
I think
these organizations. Because I really feel like that's a very realistic shift that's going to
like
happen.
to link our last episode, this would have been mitigated if we had a better Twitter or a better social media stuff. Okay, that sounds.
So overall, we think things are okay with AI.
Well, I'll let you start. What do you think? Do you think okay with AI? Are you okay with AI?
I mean, like I said at the beginning, I'm very pro. I encourage everybody to at least explore it. Try it out.
To
F
me,
figure out what you can and cannot do with it versus just having an. If you had an opinion about it 6 months ago, the opinion is almost out of date because a lot of those limitations are much better. Those they've improved significantly since then. That's what I have come to believe.
it's for me, it's honestly, of course, I'm not a caveman. It's very exciting as well. But then I feel like this is so many things going on in a short time. It's like on top of my experiments, on top of thing, this is something that I have to invest time in learning or invest time in processing and digesting and all that. Is like, such a pain in the ass. But if it is more, let's say, straight, and also another thing that I am kind of, it's keeping me away. It's like something you're saying. If I study something right now, in 6 months, it's going to be something new completely. Then I would have to figure that out. And in 6 months, that'll be, I mean, Google with one thing is, yeah, they have updated version, but it's more or less stable. It's more or less like you know what to expect. Here, it is so dynamic. Every time it's something new. So you're just like blinking, like, wait, what? But if I know how to do it, I would be much enthusiastic to try. I think I'm just waiting for it to just settle down for a while. So I can just, okay, now tell me what you're doing. If since you are out of your teenage phase, since you have figured yourself out, now tell me what's going on, something like that. But
So
in all, I'm
maybe
excited.
I'll pass along the what I tell my graduate students
It's
is I never want to read a shitty paper from you again, right? You have so many resources available to you that you should be able to, when I see a paper, it should be grammatically correct with no spelling errors, and logically it should flow and make sense, right? Take what you want to say, write it a paragraph out, put that into ChatGPT, see what it does. If you don't like it, don't use it. If there's aspects of it that you like, figure out why you like it. Don't just copy and paste it, but figure out what it did. And the nice thing is, it'll straight up tell you, like, I mean, I've done this stream of conscious, just I'm looking at my data and I'm just writing stream of conscious what I'm thinking about it, put it in. Hey, give me critical feedback on this. And it's like, this is trash. What you wrote is not very cohesive. There's not a lot of clear and logical thought to it. Let me help you make some suggestions on to improve it.
Okay.
Right? Just that's what I'm saying. Explore it. Right? If you don't like it, you don't have to use it, but figure out what it has to offer.
That's a good
Because I
advice.
really think people with, second, English is not their primary language. English is the second language. It's going to be very helpful, right? Especially for drafting things,
No, because
communication
when I
wise.
am drafting it, it's been, to be very honest with you, it's been very helpful for me when I have to draft sentences, rephrase grammar, all that jazz.
Because I'll write a paragraph and I'm like, oh, I don't know. I get into my mind like, I'm going to finally get it to say, this is fine. There's no adjustments needed. But it's always like, hey, why don't you change the wording of this sentence to this. I'm like, ah, that does sound better because, you know, they've moved some word and it's like, it makes, and it'll tell you why this makes it better. It's because you've got this flow, your adverb and your verb need to be cohesive in this statement. This makes it more cohesive and it fits from sentence to sentence. And I'm like, oh, okay. It's then going to pattern the way that I write things, right? I mean, it's going to help me improve my writing skills because it's providing that feedback. It's not just, I mean, I guess you could just write this for me, whoop, copy paste, but using it as a tool to figure out how to make it better, right? That I think is so powerful.
No, I agree. I
So,
can see that. Yeah.
especially just because I often will have stream of consciousness thoughts that I'm like, this is what I want to say. And I think I'm the kind of writer that I come up with the way I want to say it, and I make like I want it to say that way, regardless of what any other, even if I send it to like you or somebody else to revise it, I'm like, nah, whatever. I like the way that I've said it here because I came up with it. I'm very much that way, but it at least helps put a lot of other complicated thoughts that I've got down into something cohesive and understandable in some cases.
I don't know.
So.
Okay. I think that's a great point to end the episode. Yeah. All righty.
Great.
Thank you for anybody who's listening. And
Yeah.
yeah, thank you. Thank you, Zane.
Until, yeah, thanks, Gopu. Till next time.
Yeah, I hope somebody from SFN sees this and offers us so much money so we'll have we can have them as their sponsors. But there you go. I think, yeah, should be fine.